So I'm here with Derek Bishton, and importantly, we're going to discuss Handsworth self-portrait 40 years on. So Derek, let's just start with what I guess was quite a simple idea, but has led to a real sort of burst of colour and complexity, really.
Well, I suppose so. I mean, taking ourselves back 40 years, when you certainly weren't born and I was just a wee lad, you've got to remember that very few people had cameras. Very few people, certainly in an inner city area like Handsworth, had access to the means to represent themselves. The only pictures that people took, generally speaking, were very formal portraits in the portrait studios that existed at that time. And those were really only on special occasions, usually when someone had arrived from the Caribbean or the Indian subcontinent and established themselves, bought their first suit or whatever, and they went along to have a photograph taken to show how they'd arrived and made it and so on to send back home. But by and large, people didn't have photographs. And the idea of a selfie, which of course these days is so common it's ridiculous, was of course completely unheard of then. I was based at that time in Grove Lane in Handsworth with two other guys, and we worked as a sort of design and photography agency working for inner city groups. So we were working with immigration units, with people studying unemployment, with social activists, with people fighting discrimination, all those kind of things that were going on at that point. And one of the issues that faced us was that there we were, three white guys in a multicultural area, going around with our cameras, and people sort of looking at us and thinking, well, what are these guys up to? I mean, I wasn't a trained photographer. I come from a journalist background. I trained as a journalist, but I picked up a camera because, you know, some of the jobs that we were being asked to do required some images. So I was a kind of happy amateur, but I was a bit uncomfortable with this sort of poking my lens in people's faces and, you know, kind of, you tended to get very confrontational kinds of images or people looking at you, you know, kind of what's going on, you know. And one day, quite by chance, in a photographic magazine called Camera Work, there was an article about self-portraiture. And this was written by a feminist writer at the time who was talking about how women could escape the male gaze, as it's called, the objectifying gaze of men who only want to see women in a particular way. And she was suggesting, oh, well, the way to get around this is take your own photograph. And there was in this article a photograph that had come from a Russian trade fair, an American trade fair in Kiev. And some guy had set up a self-portrait stand for the local Kiev housewives to take their own photo. And there was just this one picture of this big, chunky Kiev housewife taking her own photograph. And I looked at that and I said, that's what we should do. That's what we should do. We should get people to take their own photos. And we talked about it, the three of us, you know, it seemed like a kind of interesting idea. Yeah, how could we do it? And in the end, we literally set up a studio on the pavement outside the front of her, because we were working from a little end of terrace house. And it didn't have a front garden. It had a space where there was once a front garden, but it had been sort of, in blue engineering bricks had been sort of laid there. So it was a perfect little space to put a pop-up studio right outside our front door so we could control it. And it was right on the street where passers-by, people going shopping. It was a busy street, you know, shops over the road. So we thought, okay, well, that's what we'll do. So being kind of slightly crazy, we set this thing up one Saturday. We put a plain background against the window, front window. And a camera, a 35mm film camera, because don't forget these are the days of film, not digital, motor drive, and a long cable release, put it on a tripod, kind of roughly framed it up so that it kind of framed up the backdrop, so when people stood there, they were in the shot, and put it at an aperture such that the depth of field was, you know, keep them sharp, you know. and stood back to see what would happen.
So nowadays, I think the kind of the idea of pop-up anything, a pop-up shop or a pop-up event, is fairly commonplace. People don't probably, you know, bat an eyelid that it's happening. Yeah. You know, if you're in the Bullring or, you know, wherever, in New Street, wherever in town, something is always is happening. But then it would have been, I guess, quite a strange, quirky thing. And you said people, some people perhaps were naturally suspicious of what you
were. Well, it was, we had no expectations at all. We just thought, let's do it and see what happens. I had done some work for the Asian Resource Centre where Ranjit Sandhi and Anita Parla were working there. And I went up to them and I said, look, Ken, we've got this idea. We're going to do this self-portrait thing. The idea is we want the people of Handsworth to create their own sort of photo album of themselves, taking their own picture. But we'd like to explain it for people who don't read English very well, in Punjabi and Urdu. So they got some people that they worked with to handwrite out basically the little message that we had. So we had signs up in English, obviously a big board, and there were some photos that we'd done of ourselves showing people what they would expect. Because the big, you know, the thing that we decided would make this a compelling proposition, as it were, was that we were offering free prints. So if you took your own photograph, you got a free print of it the following week. And yes, you know, kind of, it was a bit of a grey day. It was. I mean, it was August, but it was miserable weather. It wasn't raining, but it was very overcast. It was a bit like, you know, kind of, you know, when I look back at the pictures now, you see people are wearing sweaters and overcoats, and you think it's been done in the winter, but it's actually in the middle of the summer. Of course, what happened was the kids came along. Kids came along, and kids will do anything. I mean, they just thought, well, laugh, you know, we'll have a go at this. And they were terrific fun. One of the first self-portraits that was taken were of two young Asian girls, twins, who came and they lived on the same, on Grove Lane. So they were like basically neighbours. And they came along, saw what was going on. And they did a little sort of dance for us because they kind of came on. They you know, the way kids don't have any inhibitions. They just sort of took it at face value. Oh, we can take our picture. Great. They came on. One of them took the cable release. They kind of, I don't know, the sort of synchronicity that twins sometimes have. They kind of both turned their backs to the camera, took a picture, and then sort of jumped up, turned around, faced the camera, and took another picture. And then just sort of ran off laughing, you know? And the picture is in the exhibition. And it's a beautiful photograph, you know. It's a lovely picture and it's such a lovely idea. And it was so spontaneous what they did, you know. They went, of course, and told their family about what they'd done. And the following week, they came back because the way we organised this, we hadn't intended to do loads of these sessions. But at the start, we just thought, well, we'll do one and see what happens. But we had said to people, come back next Saturday, and we'd have the free prints ready. And of course, some people probably thought, But what we did was, during the week, as we printed up the pictures, because it was quite a task printing up all these pictures, because even in the first week, you know, 70 or 80 people had participated in this thing. We put the pictures up in the front window so people could see there were definitely going to be pictures available. And then we opened up on Saturday morning and people came and collected their pictures. And of course, once it became clear that A, the pictures were really nice and that we were living up to, you know, what we said we would do, it became obvious that we had to do more of these little pop-up sessions. So in the end, we did 5 of them. And, you know, following on from that first week when the kids had come along and the young people had come along, then the following weeks we got the whole family, you know, right up to granddad and granny and the whole works, you know. Unique, really, documentation of the people who were living in Handsworth at that time, you know.
Now, Handsworth is, I want to explore why Handsworth was kind of picked. And obviously you've explained some of it's where you were based and some of the things that are happening. But 1979 was quite a year of change and of changing, if you see what I mean. There were lots of things that happened to Handsworth previously. There were lots of comings and goings, for want of a better description.
Well, Handsworth has always been, I mean, since post-war, you know, settlement from the from the Caribbean and from the Indian subcontinent, has always been a destination area, partly because, unlike a lot of the surrounding areas which were bulldozed in the post-war years to create new housing, Handsworth escaped because it had actually a very good housing stock, basically. You know, lots of nice houses, and had, you know, formerly, you know, the Lord Mayor lived there, and a lot of reasonably wealthy, you know, middle-class people had houses there. In the 50s and early 60s, they started to leave to go to Handsworth Woods and Caulfield, further afield outside of Birmingham. So these big houses became available, and of course they were perfect for multi-occupation. So they were perfect for the people who were arriving to fill the jobs in the health service and the foundries and so on. It had always had, as it were, since the early 50s, this mixture of people, black people from the Caribbean, Asian people from India, Pakistan, and of course the white population as well. So, and the 70s, I think, was a sort of moment when that visibility, as it were, that sort of multicultural visibility really became kind of nationally visible at a national scale, because the unemployment had started, the contraction of all the traditional Birmingham manufacturing industries, the jobs that those people had come to do started to disappear. So people who hadn't been visible on the streets previously, because they had been working all the hours that God sent, suddenly were more visible. Their children started to be visible, and there were no jobs for them. There were issues around sort of the police targeting young black kids just because they were walking around the streets looking a bit different. And of course, you had the beginnings of the sort of Rasta revolution, reggae music. All of these were sort of social issues that were coming to national attention, and they were being treated in very stereotypical ways. You know, I mean, job losses were blamed on immigrants, crime was blamed on young black kids. In other words, like, the residents of Handsworth were really responsible for all the social ills that the society had. Kind of, and of course, 1979 was the year that Thatcher got into power, and that heralded a big change in terms of government policy towards the inner cities and how they should be funded and how they should be, you know, how these social problems should be addressed. So it was a key moment, I think, you know, and I think we were aware of that. You know, we were aware that we were living through a kind of really a very important moment in terms of what was modern Britain going to be? How was it going to react to the fact that now it had become a multicultural society? And how did people feel about that? And I think, you know, kind of the sense was that if you lived in Handsworth, as I did, and lived amongst all these different people, what you had was a very different perception to people who lived on the outside, who were frightened of it, scared of it. And, you know, I mean, in a way, 40 years on, we've seen with the, you know, kind of post-Brexit debate and on all the issues around immigration, really not a lot has changed in these issues. I mean, the target of people's sort of fear has moved from people from the Caribbean and the Indian subcontinent to people from Eastern Europe, but it's the same issue surfacing. I felt then, and I feel even more strongly now, that there was so much positivity in Handsworth at that time, inside Handsworth, amongst the people themselves. You know, we weren't talking about sort of issues in terms of, oh, we need something for the Muslim community, or we need something for the Sikh community, or we need something for the Afro-Caribbean. We were talking about, oh, we need something for the community. And that includes everyone. And it was seen to be like a political issue that people could all come together around, because it wasn't about, oh, the Sikhs have got to have this, or the Muslims have got to have this, or, you know, the Afro-Caribbeans have got to have their own centre. And you know, all of that came later, that dividing up of the community. But at that point, you know, there was a sense that it was a very harmonious community. And I think what this exhibition captures is exactly that. You look at the diversity of people and you think, well, all these people were just walking past our place on a Saturday morning. Every single one of those people was on the street walking past our place. And they were, everyone was getting, people knew one another, they were getting on. You see plenty of, you know, mixed couples, as it were, black and white people walking down the street together. So there was a, you know, I think there's a great lesson to be learned from looking back at these pictures. Because in a way, I think we've lost that sense of harmony, or that sense of potential that a multicultural society can give.
So when you started out with the project, was it that you were trying to tackle that, I guess, that negative perception that people, or that negative idea that people had of Handsworth or that part of the city? Or was it that you were trying to explore it, or at least start a dialogue around what it was?
Well, I think it was a bit of both, because we were aware of the negative coverage, obviously, because a lot of the groups that we were working with were fighting against just such negative coverage. I mean, one of the projects that we were involved in was editing a book called Talking Blues, which was a series of interviews with black people about their relationship with the police, that was commissioned by an organisation that was run by Claire Short, who later became the MP for the area. And it and what those interviews showed was that, you know, kind of almost universally, the black population was being targeted unfairly by the police, you know, in all kinds of ways. So we were aware that there were these negative things, and we wanted to be able to kind of deal with that by isolating people. That was one of the reasons that we put the plain backdrop. We didn't want you to see the inner city landscape, the slightly run-down inner city landscape, because if you see people in the context of that, you immediately have a certain preconception, you can't help it, oh, they're living in a run-down area, oh, you know, all sorts of negative things follow from that. So we were very conscious of that. But we also wanted to, kind of give people a voice, give people agency, you know, let them literally put themselves in the frame. You know, take us out of the equation as photographers. Not entirely, obviously, because we, you know, we were setting the thing up. We were creating the space for them to. But what we really wanted was to see how people reacted when they had control of the decisive moment. So instead of being the subject of somebody else's representation, they had their own agency in these pictures. And again, you know, I remember the first week when we processed the first rolls of film and we're looking at the contact sheets, you know, and we were just saying, wow, the people just look so good. People are so confident, you know, the presence that you felt, you know, was just extraordinary. And for us, that was like a benchmark of, yes, let's see how far we can take this, you know.
And I think there were over 500 people that you sort of came into contact through the
yeah.
project. And
yeah.
the exhibition itself, I think, has 44 prints or 44 pictures.
The exhibition, yeah, I think approximately 500 people. I've never quite counted them all up. I have recently been scanning some of the negatives that we didn't print at the time. And I know it's well over 400. But at the time, when we came to look at the work and we wanted to present it, we didn't have the resources to be able to produce a huge, anything that represents anything like the scale of the number of people who took part. We selected 44 pictures in the end that were like representative of the different groups and ethnicities and ages and so forth that had taken part. So we had young, old, black, white, etc. And those prints were... John Reardon printed those because he was a superb darkroom technician. He printed those 44 prints. They went on to show locally in community centres and so on. They were also shown at the Icon Gallery in Birmingham and a couple of other places. But really, that and those prints subsequently were purchased by the Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery for their permanent collection. So those 44 prints are going on show, I think, for the first time in probably 30 or 40 years as part of this exhibition. And in addition to that, I have curated from the original negatives a further just over 200 images, which we're going to put on the end wall of the gallery. These are pictures that have never been seen in public before. So these are, and I've been publishing these on the Instagram, Handsworth Self-Portrait Instagram feed, and also putting a few up on Facebook and so on. I've had like lots and lots of people contacting me about, oh my goodness, that's my dad. Oh, you know, kind of, because we've got to remember this is 40 years ago. So obviously people who are quite young in these pictures are now middle-aged, and obviously people who are elderly in these pictures have probably passed on. So,
yeah. Let's talk about some of the images themselves.
Yeah, sure.
Because there are some fantastic images that you've managed to capture. And the first one that kind of caught my eye, and we were talking about it a little bit just before we started rolling the tape, I'll try and describe it, so I won't do this justice, but there are two, I think, lads about town, let's call it that, in what can only be described as very dangerous trousers. I think the 70s was a period for dangerous trousers. They're very flared, very high. But there's a particular sort of swagger and a pose. And I think we've almost found, I think, John Travolta's Handsworth brother, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, this has been one of the most popular images from the entire number that got shot. These two guys walked up. One of them's wearing a turban and a very smart suit with a very high waist, double kind of waistband type thing. And of course the flares are outrageous. I mean, they're just like, you know, they just cover your shoes, you know.
No need for public transport with those flares. You can just fly anywhere.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it is so of its time, isn't it? And they pose so naturally together, the two of them. Everyone loves that picture. I think we're using that photograph on a billboard in Handsworth to advertise the exhibition, so people will get the chance to see it. Yeah, I mean, the luxuriant hair of the John Travolta lookalike as well, it's just fabulous.
What I find interesting about it is, in terms of the composition of it, is the clicker, as I would call it, the kind of the capture remote. Obviously, infrared hadn't quite made it mainstream at that stage, but it kind of is unobtrusive. Although you can see it, and obviously they're conscious that they're holding it and ready to click it, it doesn't frame the picture in the same way that a selfie on a mobile might, because people have to hold it in a certain way, and you know, there's always that kind of uncomfortable bit where you can't work out whether to touch the screen or
not. Actually, that's a very interesting point, because some people, when they took their picture, were quite deliberate holding the... because in order to create the cable release, we had to sort of get a little electronic clicker and basically weld a wire that plugged into the camera, because there weren't kind of commercial things available. The only thing that was available were those sort of, they were like rubber balls with air in, and you squeezed it to take the to press the shutter. But the problem we found with that was that when people squeezed it, they kind of automatically made a face, because they thought it was going to be quite difficult to squeeze it, you know? So in the end, we're John being a bit of a technical genius, and Brian as well, they're very good at this kind of thing, kind of found this little electronic clicker button. And as I say, and some people, like in this photograph you're talking about of the two young men, he'd just been really casual and holding it down by his side, like almost as though it's not there. Other people kind of held it right in front of their face and sort of, hey, look at this, you know, I'm taking my picture, boof, you know.
And it's very natural in the sense that you could believe he'd done it several times before, you know, it's always something he did, had his picture taken.
This is the thing, you know, this is something that comes up with almost all of the photographs, is that in very few of them do you feel that the person is uncomfortable with the idea of taking their own photo. They I mean, I suppose what it says is, like, we love taking our own photo. I mean, obviously we know that now because we've all got phones that we can do this on. So maybe it's just something in human nature that we just like the idea of being able to create an image of ourselves, and that this project kind of really was an early forerunner of all of that, you know?
Well, let's move from this print, which is Raj and his friend, to something else fabulous and fantastic, which is this gentleman here, whose moustache, I think, really kind of dominates. And we were saying again that the fashion, again, sort of screams out at you on this. One thing I was going to ask you, actually, throughout all of these are all black and white photos.
Yeah.
And that's very consciously that tone, if you like, that kind of that monochrome. What was the sort of feeling and thinking behind that?
Well, really, that we couldn't afford to do it any other way. This was very practical, you know, because obviously we processed all the black and white film ourselves in our own little darkroom there, and we had no facilities for doing colour. And in those days, it wasn't, even then, it was relatively difficult and expensive to kind of take your roll of colour film to a processor, you know, and the results are uncertain. You know, and we could control it all. And, you know, we like black and white because it kind of, in a way, takes a lot of distractions out of it and makes you look at the formal kind of, you know, somehow there's something quite sort of classical about it, you know. And, of course, when you've got a photograph like this gentleman who's got just a fabulous handlebar moustache, you know, obviously a very, very smartly dressed. He's got a wonderful kind of, I mean, it's almost up art, that pullover, isn't it? You know, if you stare at it for too long, you kind of go dizzy.
And the other thing about this is the clicker, the star of the show, the clicker in this, almost makes it look like he's emphasising a really important point, or, you know, kind of saying, this is who I am.
Yes, yes, exactly, yes, yes, yes. He's holding it up sort of in front of his chest. He's actually, his fingers are covering the thing, so you can't actually see, you can only just see the wire just twisting out. And because, yes, as you said earlier, he's got a signet ring on, he's showing off his sort of, look, you know, I can afford a ring, you know, kind of, you know, there's a lot of sort of self-awareness in the photo. And this is the thing that I think, I won't say it surprised us, but it delighted us, that people seem to be so in possession of a self-image that they wanted to project. And that was totally contrary to the kind of way in which people were being represented as, you know, all the same, no differentiation.
Mm.
Oh, these are all Asian people. As though all Asian people are the same, and yet we knew from working in that area how many different groups there were in different parts of India, different parts of Pakistan, and so on, that were all kind of being bundled together under this kind of blanket description as though they were all the same. And of course the same with the people who'd come from the Caribbean. They were just, well, they were black people, but they were just like, you know, all Jamaicans, you know, which was really offensive to people who came from Barbados and Trinidad and all these other islands, you know.
Now, there are lots of families in the pictures, and there are lots of couples as well, but there's also one, the last one I just wanted to talk to you about was this gentleman here on a motorbike.
He's on his Triumph Daytona.
Which means something to petrol heads out there,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, gosh, I mean, what a classic motor this was. I mean, this, you know, and of course, what a great Birmingham brand that was just about to go under at the time. No, I mean, he turned up one day with his girlfriend, and I think he was a friend of Brian's, I think, or at least Brian knew him. And he just turned up to see what was going on, you know, kind of. And he pulled up on the curbside, like right by where we were doing the photo shoots on this motorbike. And I think it was towards the end of the day, because you can see the backdrop's got quite dirty where people have been standing on it all day. And we just said, why don't you drive your motorbike on? We'll do you on the motorbike. Well, of course, the framing was such we couldn't get the whole motorbike in, but it was just such an outrageous idea, and he was totally into it, you know? But you look at him, you just think, absolutely, easy rider. What a classic, you know, kind of look that is from that period as well. You know, the long hair, the beard, the leather jacket, the jeans, the boots, the bike, you know?
He's got the full package, hasn't he?
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely, style icon, you know?
The exhibition Handsworth Self-Portrait, 40 years on, is here at the back from Saturday the 23rd of March till Sunday the 2nd of June. But there's also an opening event, I think, on Saturday the 30th of March at 2 o'clock.
Right.
So I guess you were saying something, talking to people, networking, that kind of
thing? Well, what we're hoping is to try and get as many of the people who are either in the photos or whose relatives are in the photos to kind of come along so we can make it a bit of a celebration from that point of view. And who knows what might develop out of it. I mean, a lot of people have said to me, well, why don't you photograph the people again? And I'm like, well, in a way, the self-portrait genre is now something that everybody does it. And I'm not saying that's not a reason to do it, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it will just be lovely to see some of the people. I say a lot of them have been in contact with me anyway to say they want to come, so that would be great. Yes, I'll be saying a few words, and I'm also doing on the the last Sunday of the show a little walk round talk, which is free, so people just have to register if they want to find out a little bit more about some of the pictures and how we did it and so forth. Yeah.
Excellent. And one final question I just want to ask you. You mentioned a little bit earlier about the kind of world we're in at the moment, the kind of the post-Brexit or Brexit conundrum, let's call it that. How do you think people would respond today to the, you know, you there on that corner with a pop-up? How different would the response be? Or would there be similar things, or what do you think?
Do you know, I don't know. I've thought about this because people have said, well, why don't we go back and do it again, you know? And we have thought about it. And the place is still there. Our little spot where we could do our pop-up is still there. And certainly, of course, the community has altered its demographics since we were there. And interestingly, you know, there are now a lot of people from Eastern Europe who are living in Handsworth, who've opened shops and, you know, like in a way carrying on the tradition of people who came in previous generations from other parts of the world. So it has still got that sense of a melting pot, of a kind of changing. I think the difference is that we seem to, as a country, have become quite divided about our attitudes to whether we think this is a good or a bad thing. I think kind of there was always an undercurrent, obviously here in Birmingham, you think about Enoch Powell's speech, the Rivers of Blood speech and so forth. There was always a kind of unease about immigration. But I think as long as people saw that economically it made sense, they kind of could rub along with it. Now there's this feeling that somehow, even if it makes economic sense, they don't want it. And that's what I find worrying, is that, you know, kind of we seem to be sort of like moving into a deliberately isolationist kind of mentality. And I think that is so bad, because so much of what makes modern Britain exciting and interesting place to be is down to the fact that we have all these different cultures and nationalities contributing to the national debate. So, don't know. I'm sorry, I'm sitting on the fence on that one. I don't know what the response would be. Maybe it would be interesting to find out. We'll see.
Excellent. Well, Derek, I'm really looking forward to the exhibition, and it's been great to have a chat with you. And thanks very much for walking me through some of the photos.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Thank you.